This is day four of the June 92 7-day retreat at Springwater. I wrote down very few questions this time. Here they are. What is meant when it is said that everything is empty? Does it mean empty of meaning, that everything is meaningless? Here is a composite of many questions, this whole thing of overdoing, doing too much, not doing, resistance to doing has generated quite a bit of discussion in groups and also individual meetings. So here is a composite of several things that came up. When you talk of not doing anything, are you saying that we shouldn't do anything? What about doing something that we really love to do? Like, for instance, making a garden, growing things, taking care of plants and flowers, or writing stories or poems, or working with people who have problems, who have difficulties, who are in an emergency, or working with people who have AIDS or are in prison. You talk a lot about the fact that we are in truth, not separate from one another. But I feel separate most of the time, if not all of the time. What do you mean by saying that we all share the same human consciousness? Someone also put a note on my table in there. It's a quote by a Wei Wu Wei. Why are you unhappy? Because 99.9% of everything you think and of everything you do is for yourself. And there isn't one. Then why are we unhappy? So maybe to start and maybe end with this question about what do you mean when you say that in truth we're not separate from one another? When I feel so separate most of the time, maybe all of the time, feeling isolated, alone or lonely, not in direct relationship with anyone, maybe not even my family. Or maybe particularly not my family. And what do you mean when you say that we all share the same human consciousness, that it is all one, undivided? And how can we go into this whole thing without becoming abstract or theoretical, referring to scriptures, ancient and contemporary, but by looking inwardly and listening outwardly, can we come to an understanding of this weighty ancient and also present question? What do you mean by separation? Is there such a thing? I feel it, and you say there isn't. My consciousness feels separate. It's mine, it's individual. We read a question the other day, someone saying, if I hear you talk about conditioning, that all of us respond from old conditionings and programs, it sounds as though you're saying we're just walking around like robots. And that, I don't like to think in those terms. Aren't we all unique, one person said. Where shall we start? Shall we start from listening right now? It's warm enough today, so all the windows are open. Is the listening spacious, open, non-preferential? I'd rather hear this than that. I'd rather have the sun than the clouds. I'd rather listen freely than feeling closed up. There's the calling of birds, isn't there? It's there, isn't it? Just to listen. And there's breathing, isn't there? In every one of these human beings sitting here together, in every one of us, there's breathing going on and listening. Of course, one of us may be deaf, but there can be listening too, even if we're deaf, to the sounds of silence. The breathing is there, isn't it? It doesn't have to be in any which way. It doesn't have to be long or short, deep or shallow. It's what it is. What is it? Can we listen? And is the listening separate from chit, 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 chit? Is that separate? There's breathing and chit, chit, chit going on all the time. And the physical sensations of hands in the air or on the thighs, the feet wherever they're touching, the mat or ground. Maybe there's an ache in the shoulder or back. Maybe some sweat in the armpits. And tweet, tweet, and the breathing. Cool air. The light that fills this room. Fills the outside and this room. Where's the separation? Maybe even fills the interiority of one's being. The breath, the birds, the light, the air, physical sensations, and the words that are being heard. Can one listen, touch, feel, see, open? Without constant reference to oneself. If those thoughts come up, am I doing it right? Am I doing it wrong? Can those thoughts be listened to like the sound of the birds calling? He's doing it better. I'm doing it worse. I'm not. And the breathing, the touch. The body with the hands, the touch of the body to the floor or mat. In this listening, which is open, spacious, not judged, not preferential, not excluding this from that, not calling anything a distraction. If I call it a distraction, let me listen to it. What is it? And hear whatever's there, thoughts or emotions, and the birds, the breathing. In this listening, where is the division between you and me? I don't feel it, I don't see it, it's not there. It's one listening, isn't it? One breathing and bird calling and sensing. Because obviously my body feels a little bit different from yours. But that's true for both of us. Our bodies feel different. It's universally true. But in this openness of listening and not worrying about doing it right or wrong, abstaining from comparison, just it's not to be compared, is it? It's just there. Where are we separate from one another? Even though there are 26 or 36 different bodies sitting here, I'm not trying to be derogatory and referring to each other as bodies. We can also say friends sitting here. It sounds better. So where is the division, the separation between you and me? Unless I think, well, I'm here and I'm Tony and you're there and you're this and so forth. Then thought begins to create division. And if I think I'm worse or inferior to you, then emotion enters in. Feelings of inferiority, which hook into a network of past feelings of inferiority, insufficiency, with all the felt emotions that have ever gone on in feeling insufficient, which are all recorded in this brain and organism and can be evoked at any time in the midst of this open listening. The sound of the leaves, can we hear it? Or the wind, call it what you will. The word is not what's going on. What is going on? It's there, isn't it? So where is there you and me in that? It has to be thought about. And then it's there as an idea, a word, a thought, and all the past associations networked into this brain and organism, imprinted in who knows what chemical and electronic and whatever ways. There's constant research on that. But one can feel it. One doesn't have to read research to be cognizant of it, aware of it. The whole network of self-reference, my past, my future, my insufficiency or my superiority, all the emotions and sensations that go with such thoughts. Thought like that arises and emotion accompanies it faithfully. It's so intricately interwoven. Can it be listened to, felt, seen? By seeing, I mean there is a transparency. There can be a transparency to a thought arising about how poor I am and the feeling about it. Can be a transparency about that. And in that transparency, that thought need not continue. If it's not seen, if it's not transparent or obvious, it goes on and the mood darkens. Body feels heavy and one feels separate from the others who seem to be so much more fortunate or capable or better off or whatever, or worse off. Can we get a bit of a feeling or insight? Or maybe just intellectual understanding, it doesn't matter, of the fact that in open listening to what is actually there this moment, where is the division? I don't see any. I don't feel any. I don't hear any. I don't think any. Maybe for whatever reason such openness cannot be sustained for long in the beginning. It increases in strength and duration. Why, how, who knows? In doing this, what we're doing, listening, sitting, getting together quietly, discussing things, talking about it, inquiring into ourselves and each other, and therefore attending intensely together with a shared energy, which anyone who participates in an intense group discussion feels that shared energy of looking together, exploring together. And with that, this awareness and listening ceases to be just that of a firefly and has some stability, but not to hanker for it, or wait on it, or expect it, or want it, because that's not attention. That's the circuit of me wanting to be better, which is ancient, wired into this whole system, wanting to be better, wanting to progress, to achieve, to become somebody worthy, to save oneself from the pain of unworthiness, which is just a pain of past conditioning. The thought of unworthiness and the treatment one may have gotten as being unworthy, lack of love or care and nourishing, that has left a pain and that is evoked anytime I think I'm not worthy and therefore must become somebody. But we are already everything. The wind, the birds, the breath, the trees moving, close stars and distant stars. Where is the division? When thought doesn't create it, but the mind is openly what? Perceiving, the word can't capture it. Open, unobstructed. The energy not in the circuit of my past and present and future, but here, listening, attending together. To what is a shared aliveness among us and this whole earth and world and universe. A shared and unfathomable aliveness. Now, one may think, here you go again, painting pies in the sky. I'm being told this a lot, so I remember that. You always talk about a state and then I want to attain that. Why don't you talk about the problems we have, our difficulties, our fears, anger? That's where I am, not in this open who knows what. A lot of resonance. We do that. We go, whoever brings up anger or fear in a meeting together or in a group, let's enter into it. Always ready for it, to enter into fear or depression or anger, to feel it together. We can feel it together. Burn together in anger or shiver in fear together. Meaning not separating oneself out as the sufferer of it, the haver of this fear, the one who is afraid. There's only fear when there's fear. There's only anger. Talked about it last night. When that's there, the openness is gone. It just absorbs the whole space. So, even though the whole space is absorbed with anger or fear, there can be a listening, a sensing of it, an awareness of it. We wake up to it. It happens. I don't know how or why, but it does happen. And then just to feel, not just to say, oh, here I am angry again, how much longer will I be angry? Or I have a right to be angry, it's justified. Or I shouldn't be angry. You know, all of those thoughts that come up prevent just there being the anger in full awareness, or maybe just partial awareness. How does it feel in the throat, the throbbing, maybe blood in the head? Certainly one can feel the narrowing of the senses, the narrowing of the field. One feels like in a tight tube, talking about that yesterday, how I felt in it, like in an echo chamber, tightly bouncing back and forth. anger and justification and dialogue with the person who made me angry and how blah, blah, blah. In that state of caught upness in something that happened to us and comes up as a remembrance, or as it comes up this moment, you say something to me and I get angry over it. We get angry when our ways are thwarted, we're not recognized, we're humiliated. Often, somebody who made us angry doesn't even realize, why did he or she get so angry? I didn't mean to make you angry. But it resonates with stuff that has made one angry before. Enraged, maybe one was not able to express that rage, but now it reverberates. Maybe more so in a silent retreat where the conscious mind sort of becomes more open to stuff percolating up, less censoring, less restrictive and repressive. Stuff comes up, and either the real situation, somebody saying something to me, criticizing me, and the anger, or the remembered thing, because we carry it around with us, what happened actually becomes a memory and can be reacted to just as vehemently as the actual situation. In that state of fear, anger, concern about revenge, paying back to him what he did to me, all the pain of loneliness, the agony of wanting someone, feeling so unloved, pain of that, and wanting relationship, people, wanting someone's love, wanting to be held, whatever. In that state, in these states, whatever they are, they change, they're different for you and me at this time or that time, different alternations for each person of these states, in that there isn't this spacious openness. One may not even realize that the wind is moving the trees, that the leaves are fluttering and shivering and rubbing against each other. Birds are twittering, and the breath is there, maybe choppy, or when it's fear or anger. But there can be a waking up to this state anytime. It doesn't matter how involved or enwebbed one may be. There can be a waking up to what's going on. And then can there just be a simple listening? Or is immediately the thought, I don't want to feel this way, or this will never stop, it hasn't stopped in the past. All the rationalizations we give for our fears, we really get attached to our painful states, just as we get attached to our pleasurable states. This is our existence, becomes the idea of our existence, to be fearful. Are angry, we have ideas, people have told us what we are, and we live up to these images. So in waking up and coming to a state like this, do we immediately say, well, this is the way I am, this is how it is, I can never get out of this, here it is again? Or can there be a quiet, simple, bare listening to what is going on inside and out, without judgment or commentary, seeing how one tries to hold on to something? What is it we're trying to hold on to? Being something, isn't it? Being something, no matter how miserable or how whatever. This is what I am. And I need to continue as something. Can one question that, whether there is attachment to one's diverse states of being? attachment, meaning a fear of letting go, a fear of having nothing to hold on to, of being nothing. Fear of openness, without any reference point. The fear would be the idea of openness without reference, because openness without reference, there's nothing fearful in that. There's nothing anger arousing or lonely feeling in that, because in that there is no separation. Are all of our fears, all of our angers, all of our loneliness and sorrow connected, in fact, with this feeling of separation? You could say, how do I know? That's all I know. Feeling separate and fears and constant wanting. As one person put it, I realize I have to coexist with that. This is how I am. In feeling separate, there is wanting and fearing. They go together. Wanting and fearing are never separate from each other, just like pain and pleasure. Never really separate from each other. One conditions the other. We have pleasure and we're afraid we may be losing it. And for many people in pain, there is a certain pleasure of suffering. I just read recently, it was very interesting, that in the brain, the pleasure and pain center are so closely located together that you cannot incite or stimulate one without the other, which would explain a lot. One lives for pleasure and can afford it time-wise or money-wise to have pleasure, so often it goes overboard into violence, not just if one has money. The pleasure to inflict pain or to suffer it. And wanting and fearing, afraid of our separateness, we want things, afraid of our insufficiency, wanting to be sufficient. Or just wanting more pleasure because it is remembered so well. And the body has its associated feelings with remembered pleasure, wanting more of it and more of it. And it's unattainable because the more we have, the more we want, or it turns into pain or displeasure. There's a saying that I heard as a child by the adults. It was over the long Christmas holidays when families would get together and guests, and there were endless good meals. There's a saying which says, nothing is harder to bear than a series of good days, or pleasurable days. We OD on anything after a while. We talked about that in a recent retreat, getting used to things. This organism is programmed to get used to things, pain or pleasure. And if it is the pleasure one wants, one needs to have greater doses to which one gets used, and then the body, something snaps, body can't take it anymore. So Not how can I get rid of the separation. Now, it makes sense to me, it's logical what you're saying. So if I would get out of the separation, I would never have fear or wanting anymore. This is not what we're saying. We're not saying get rid of it, be free of it, transcend it. But become intimate with it, aware of it, live with it openly, intelligently. Learn as we go about and with our feelings of separation and all what it spawns and how it reacts and how the body responds. To live with it and learn about it, be intimate, be wise about what is happening to this human being, which, as I say so often, is representative of all human beings, even though we are in a way unique, each of us not being entirely, totally the same as the other. I read once that the odds of two human beings being alike is so astronomical you can't even put the zeros down. So large is the number of odds that this would happen. So it can't happen. It's impossible. And also, each one of us has unique experiences. Even two twins, one egg twins, don't have the same experiences. Same experiences as with their parents. As they walk down the street, one may look left, one may look right and see different things. One may be traumatic, the other not. We have unique capacities, but we didn't grow them. It's not our merit that we have them. We happen to have them. The fact that in a whole series of Mozarts or Bachs, then suddenly there is one who stands out as a long history already of musical inheritance, genes, DNA. And even the geniuses of Bach and Mozart fall into a musical development, which manifests in individual human beings, who then, through the capacity of their thought, may pride themselves on their accomplishments, their abilities and capacities, as though they were responsible for it and created it. We have these false ideas about where our stuff comes from. Where does it come from? How did I come to be? There was an egg and a sperm that got together. And where did they come from? Where did my parents come from, and their parents, and their great-great-great-grandparents? Where did everybody come from? And the animals, and the plants, and the first one-cellular organisms, and this earth, and the solar system, the galaxy, the universe, where did it all come from? There are lots of theories, of course, but the answer is, I don't know. From everything or from nothing. And so here we sit, coming from everything and from nothing. Who knows? We don't know where we come from. Here we are. The thoughts we have, the opinions we cherish, the beliefs we have, where did they come from? From the families and groups and social strata and country that we grew up in. If we had grown up in another country, we would have different opinions and different beliefs, different prejudices, different ideologies. Our thoughts are mostly collective. Even though we pride ourselves on our individual thoughts, think that we sort of spawned them, but where did they come from? Some brains are better than others to sort of, what is the word, permutate different ideas and come up with a new permutation. And then, indeed, there are direct perceptions, a direct seeing, which takes place in human beings, and who knows in whom, when, why, but it does take place in human beings. I think everyone has that potential capacity for there to be a direct insight, a direct seeing, artistically, mathematically, or spiritually. And that becomes thought again, doesn't it? It's being expressed, it's being written down, it's being thought about and read and listened to and chanted, and it becomes more collective thought. Or can the seeing be fresh again, free from the past that has become a collective thought? So we have individual experiences, unique in our makeup, not too entirely the same. And there's a lot of collective thought and opinion and prejudice and ideas, religious beliefs. Do you see that? That it's not mine? That we share that culturally or tribally or ethnically? And that's true for all of us. The content may be different of my belief and your belief, but beliefs we have, ideologies we have, opinions and prejudices we have, the content varies. But we're not different in holding to that and defending it with our life, maybe, giving our life for an idea. A movie comes to mind recently, or last year I saw it. Henry the, I don't know how many, is the third, was it, or the eighth, or the sixth? There was a piece of country that France had, and he had to get it back for England, if I remember all the politics of that. And with incredible youthful enthusiasm, beauty, oh, the movie was so captivating and got such reviews. He inspired a bunch of tramps and hoodlums, people in rags, to march forward facing this well-equipped French army. They were clever people. They had bows and arrows, I think. That's all they had, wasn't it? Some stones, maybe. But this king didn't stay way back at the computer and smart weapons. He was right in front. And inspiring everybody with talk and his beauty and youth and marvelous uniform. I wonder what it was really like that. Must have been dirty by then. To march against these French, and they were victorious. They battled them down. I don't remember how. It was an incredible medley of bodies and horses. It was quite horrible, actually. And got the piece of country back. Now it was English again. British or whatever. Because he got the lovely French princess as his wife. It's so universal, isn't it? Give one's life for an idea that this is my country, and inspire people to give their life for it, to die for it. Now, the content of each battle is different. Content of the ideas. Here we had to liberate Kuwait. That wasn't really the only motive. We had to have the oil. But inspiring, it was for the American people. For a lot of them, maybe not all of them. I know quite a few weren't inspired by it. But the yellow ribbons were sold out. Thoughts are collective, even though the content may vary from one collective to another. How How can we hold all of that and not get enmeshed in enmity against each other? Because it is a fact, we all have our opinions and prejudices. I don't have to go over it. We all have them, someplace or other. For Perot or against Perot, and Clinton and Bush, and nobody. How can we hold all of that? All of the 10,000, that's not enough, opinions and beliefs and prejudices. Hold them all, see them all for what they are. Not defend mine against yours, see the absurdity of it and the dead-endedness of it, but hold it all, see it, understand it, where it comes from, that this is how we've been conditioned. And in that we're very robot-like in defending our opinions, even though we may look as beautiful and inspiring as this Henry, I don't know how many of them. Nobody would have thought he was a robot, but he was acting on a conditioning. My country, my glory, my princess. So can we see it all in a loving way, or I don't want to get syrupy about it. Hold it without any antagonism. One meets with a board of trustees or with one's co-workers or wherever, and one sees all these different opinions and ideas and prejudices and ignorances, including one's own. Does one see one's own? Usually we always see others much better, much clearer than one's own. See it all, hold it all, and still be related with each other, even though we don't share the same opinions. But we see the absurdity of them in a way, the collectiveness, the conditionedness of them. The conditioning, the conditionedness, they are not the truth. The truth is that they are conditioned, the opinions, the assumptions, the beliefs. One person was saying that in a meeting, something like holding it all, holding all what you see about people. I think that was in connection with all the suffering, the question, what is going on in this world? Hold all the suffering, all the sorrow that is going on, all the misery and injustice. The pain, the crying, the loss. People shooting down each other's homes and children and wives, and men dying for ideas of my country. Hold that all with the wind in the trees and the breathing of this organism, which is as unfathomable as this whole universe. In its functioning. Not know it all, but hold it all. Not holding on, I don't mean that. Just, it's all there. Comprehended, meaning the hands around it all, the arms around it all. Can we be like that together, meet like that together? Not all the time the opinions will come up, the prejudices, the personal hurts and all of that stuff, and the moods that go with it, and the enclosure, tightness. But then we wake up for a moment, caw, 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 it said. And then at this moment, where are we? Where are we? Who are we? What are we? Gee, gee. Somebody said, what do Buddhists mean when they say everything is empty? Do they mean everything is empty of meaning? Leaving the Buddhists out for the moment, in holding it all quietly, listening, with no conclusions. Conclusion means closing it all up. Open, no conclusions. Holding it all. Our differences, our suffering. Antagonisms, pains, lonelinesses. Holding it all, without preference, without trying to obtain an answer, a conclusion, a result. Just, it's all being there, like the wind in the trees. There's so much space in that. There is space for everything under the sun, including the sun. Space, what is there except spacious, open listening, whatever you want to call it? No division, no holding on to me and you, even though those ideas have their place and have their space. In vast, empty space. We will end here for today.